Good morning. As we listen to the reading from Isaiah 55, we hear a voice calling out. It's not just a voice that calls out to ancient exiles returning home, but to any who are weary, restless, searching. The invitation of these nine verses is bold and unexpected. Come, everyone who thirsts, come buy and eat without money, without price. We seem obsessed with earning, with achieving. Isaiah proclaims a different kind of economy, one of grace, abundance, deep satisfaction. And this passage calls us to lay down the things that do not nourish and to open ourselves to the generous provision of God. I think during this particular season of life, as we reflect on our own dependence and our desires, these words remind us that God does not abandon us in the wilderness. Instead, God meets us there with mercy that sometimes surprises, and with provision that satisfies, and with a love that calls us home. The word of the Lord from Isaiah 55, verses 1 through 9. Hear, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come, buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money, without price. And why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your earnings for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully. Eat what is good. Delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me. Listen, so that you may live. I will make with you an everlasting covenant. My steadfast, sure love for David. See, I made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and commander for the peoples. And now you shall call nations that you do not know, and nations that do not know you shall run to you, because of the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, for he has glorified you. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake their way and the unrighteous their thoughts. Let them return to the Lord, that he may have mercy on them, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Isaiah 55 is a startling invitation to come, all you who are thirsty, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. I guess the more modern version would be come buy eggs. Yeah, we wouldn't believe it. It's a beautiful offer, but it also reveals something deeper. I mean, free groceries are great, but this is bigger than that. God calls the thirsty. Why? Why are people spending money on things that don't satisfy? The people of Israel are standing at the edge of something new. When this is proclaimed, when this is penned, they've been in exile. They're disoriented. They've been displaced. And now they're on the brink of returning home. But home is no longer what it once was. I think that's probably universally true for all of us, even without exile. There are moments in life where you go home and find out home isn't what it was. It's not the way you remembered. Think of that feeling, but on a bigger scale. The land has changed. Yes, their lives have changed. They've survived, but But surviving is not the same thing as living. And now God is calling them to trust again. Not just to rebuild their homes or to replant fields, but to reorient their hearts. This call to eat and drink without cost, it's not about food. It's about faith. When it comes to Scripture and there's food involved, it's almost never actually about the food. There are exceptions, but even when the food is there, it's not about the food. When God rains down manna from heaven and they collect this miracle bread in a desert, it's not about the food. It's about the God who gives it. It's a challenge to stop grasping for security in the wrong places and to start trusting in God's provision. There's an old saying that children who pocket food at a restaurant are usually those who are afraid that they won't have food at their next meal or not know where it's going to come from. You've heard this before. The idea is simple, that when scarcity is prevalent, people who tend to hoard are afraid that they will run out. That's the mentality here of Israel in Isaiah 55. They have a scarcity mode activated. They've been without home, without land, without place, without belonging for so long, and they're going to have to shake that scarcity mentality when they go back. And that's not easy when you've lived in survival mode, when you've had to fend for yourself. It is hard to believe generosity is real. It's hard to trust abundance, especially when generosity or abundance is given with nothing expected in return. These people had grown so accustomed to scarcity, they had learned to be cautious, even with God. That must be tough. At some level, they've learned to be scarce with what they expect of God. Because after all, God led them into a land that wasn't theirs. And yet God speaks this word of abundance into their uncertainty. God offers not just enough to get by, but an invitation to delight, to be filled, not just to live, but to enjoy living. But can they accept it? I mean, can they, will they let go of their fear long enough to receive what God is freely giving? Or do they assume there's a trick, there's a catch, but wait, there's more. There's something else, another shoe. And I think we understand this tension a little all too well. Our lives are shaped by a fear of not having enough. We make fun of that from time to time when people buy too much toilet paper or too many eggs, right? We try to make jokes about this, but I think underlying across the board for all of us, our lives are shaped by fear of not having enough money, enough time, enough certainty, enough control. And for those reasons, because we all do this in different ways, scarcity isn't just a condition. It is a mindset. We're told to be self-reliant, to secure our future, to earn our worth. Even when we have what we need, it often doesn't feel like enough. Or we just don't trust tomorrow. Yes, I have what I need today, but if tomorrow comes, would I? And that means we're always hungry for more, more success, more security, more affirmation. And just like the people in Isaiah's day, we probably spend our energy on things that just don't truly satisfy. Right? Isaiah asked a question, why do you spend your money on food that leaves you hungry? That might be an abstract thought, but if we just revamp that a little bit, why do you buy 6 dozen eggs? You're not going to eat 6 dozen eggs. You don't need that. By the time they go bad, you'll still have 5 dozen eggs. There's no way you're going to eat all 6 dozen eggs before. But because somebody's told you there's a chicken shortage, now you have to have these eggs. And we can laugh and we can say that's silly, but we played this game in various conditions and various settings and scenarios pretty much all the time. We pour ourselves into distractions, achievements, comforts, hoping that they can satisfy. But do they? If your distractions really worked, if they really satisfied you, they wouldn't be distractions. If the things that you chased after truly made you feel whole, you wouldn't need anything else. These things rarely satisfy. We find ourselves tired, anxious, spiritually empty. And so Isaiah confronts us with that truth, and it pulls back the curtain on all the ways we've tried to feed ourselves with things that just don't nourish. There's a psychological term for this now. Did you know this? This is brand new as of the last, not calendar year, but in the last 12 months, there's officially a psychological term coming forth in the next edition of the DSM, for whoever that matters to. This is called the Dorito effect. No joke. This is the real term for it, the Dorito effect. The idea that if you're eating some Doritos, a bag of chips, and you eat one chip, it satisfies you while you're chewing on it, but as soon as you swallow it, you've got nothing to show for it. You have empty calories, and so you go back to the bag and you get one more because you're only satisfied in the moment of having it. But as soon as it is consumed, you're left as empty as you started. And that Dorito effect applies to your phone. Every time you pick it up, it satisfies you, but when you put it back down, you're empty again, so you have to pick it back up. It applies to fill in the blank. Probably different for all of us. Some of you probably hate Doritos, and you hate the name of this, but this is what they're calling it, the Dorito effect. The idea that you're only ever satisfied in the moment of having something. That is what Isaiah is confronting. It invites us to stop and ask, what are we really depending on? What is it we're actually chasing after? What are we clinging to that just doesn't give life? Even in church, even in our faith, it's easy to fall into the trap of performance, to prove our devotion or earn God's favor, or more than likely just to make it look like we're doing things right and we have it all together. But Isaiah's message cuts through all of that. God's invitation is not for the worthy, it's for the thirsty. It's for the ones who know they have a real need, and yet that invitation feels so risky, doesn't it? Trusting in God's abundance means loosening our grip on everything that we've come to rely on. It means stepping into the unknown, and it means believing that grace can be enough. And I just think that might be the hardest part of believing in all of our religion. Into that fear, into the uncertainty, God speaks a different word, a word of abundance, of generosity, of welcome. Listen carefully to me, God says. Eat what is good, delight yourselves in rich food. This is not a bare minimum, this is a feast. And it's offered not because the people have earned it. It's given freely, without a price, without conditions, no other shoe, no tricks, no hidden lines, no extra clauses. God isn't just meeting basic needs. God is offering real joy, real delight, a life that you can enjoy living. And if we're being truly honest, I think this world is full of people just like us who wake up dreading life. How terrible of a thing when the greatest gift is something we dread. The heart of this passage, it's just not about food and drink. It's about a relationship. Incline your ear. Come to me. Listen so that you may live. God's provision is not something material. It's deeply personal. God is calling the people back not only to a land, but to God's very own self. The covenant that was made with David, a promise of steadfast love, is now extended to all. And it comes with no demands, just an invitation. Even more, God reminds them, and all of us, that God's ways are just not like ours. So if all of this sounds economically wrong, it is. My thoughts are not your thoughts, and your ways are not my ways. Where we see limits, God sees possibility. Where we expect conditions, God offers grace. No strings attached. Where we assume scarcity, God moves with generosity. It's long been said by people a lot smarter than me that the economics of God are just different. For some, they're scary. For others, they're hopeful. Because this is a God who satisfies a thirsty soul, who feeds the hungry heart, not just once, but again and again. If the Dorito effect is never being satisfied unless you're constantly consuming something, the God effect is always being satisfied no matter if you're consuming or not. This is the God that's revealed in Jesus, who multiplied bread, who welcomed sinners, who poured out his life freely. Because God's abundance isn't some idea in an ivory tower. It is a lived reality. It is made known through a love that never runs dry. This vision of abundance is not just a promise for the past. It's a call for how we live today, tomorrow. God invites us to live a life by grace. And faith is how we practice that trust. It trains us to loosen our grip on the things that don't satisfy, while we learn to receive what God is freely giving. Why would we spend money to try to get things that God is giving away freely and better? That might mean fasting from the habits that keep us numb. It might mean putting the Doritos down, metaphorically speaking, or literally. It might mean stepping away from the noise. It might mean turning off the news cycle. It might mean giving up something that makes you feel safe. It might mean pausing long enough to hear the Spirit say, "Come, all who are weary, and I'll give you rest." Because Isaiah's call is not just to be comforted, it is to be changed. Trusting in this abundance of God means living differently, by a different set of rules, by a different code. It means living generously, giving to those who ask without worrying about whether or not you'll get it back. It means praying expectantly, as opposed to praying performatively, I guess. Honest reflection time. You don't have to do it out loud. You can just do it in the safe old space of your head. When you do pray and when you do ask God for things, pie chart, percentage, however you want to graph this out, how often do you actually expect God to show up and do the thing? And how often do you ask hoping to be surprised versus how often do you ask because you're kind of supposed to and it might make you feel better, but you really don't expect anything? And then finally, on your pie chart, or however you want to graph this out, how often do you actually 125% expect that, yep, I'm going to ask it and God's going to do it? We have baked into our prayer life an expected disappointment. Margin of error. Our margin of error is not less than 1%. Our margin of error when we pray is probably like 90%. We give God so much wiggle room that we can try to just let God off the hook. Because it's easier that way. Because we've trained ourselves to be accepting, but not just accepting, to be expecting disappointment. As opposed to praying with an abundance, with a trust that God's going to show up every single time. This is why I think Jesus tells his disciples, if you could just muster enough faith, like just the smallest amount, like if you can have as much faith as a tiny little mustard seed, you could move a mountain. It means loving without fear. Fear is, I think, the enemy of love, not hate. Fear. If we're talking antonyms, I think fear is the antonym of love, not hate. Hate is the outcome of fear, yes. Hate is what fear looks like on the outside. But fear holds us back. It tells us that if we love our enemies, they could take advantage of us. We could lose something. The abundance of God calls us to love without fear. It means believing that even when the road ahead is uncertain, whenever you don't know how things are going to go tomorrow, when the next job is going to come around, when you may or may not be moving, when you don't know if your kids are going to grow up to be somebody you're proud of or somebody that you wish you could have done something different. It means in all those uncertainties, you are never alone and you are never without provision. And when we live that way, others take notice. And I believe that this world is hungry for a people who are not driven by fear, who aren't grasping for more, but people who live with open hands, with open hearts. When we trust in God's abundance, we become signs of it. We become witnesses to a grace that doesn't run dry. So here's my rant. I've been working on this rant for the better part of 2 decades. I think I've got it narrowed down to a few sentences, so it's a lot shorter than it used to be. Here's my rant. Heroes in movies and in TV these days, they're just not, we don't make them the same we used to. Have you noticed? When you watch TV, when you watch movies, the heroes, they're always full of faults. They mess up, they have failures. We spin this a little bit and we say that's because we like our heroes to be relatable, yeah? We love a hero who is like us. We didn't always do it that way. We used to make movies and TV where the heroes were not like us on purpose. Because here's the thing, here's where we shifted. At some point, I don't know when, but at some point within our lifetimes, we have changed our expectations for heroes, where now we make our heroes to be in our image. But there was a time in movies and TV and cinema and radio and literature when we wrote our heroes to inspire us so that we could become like our heroes rather than trying to make our heroes look like us. And now, if you see something, if you went into a movie and you saw a hero who was idyllic, who never made a mistake, who was powerful, who was good, who was just, who was just everything you've ever wanted, what would you say? All of you, without fail, would say, that's just not realistic. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of tired of expecting realistic. Isaiah 55 is not realistic. And it begs a people of God to not expect the realistic, to expect more, to be more, to yes, acknowledge that God is better and bigger than all of us, but to also call us to try to be a people of God, to be like that to the rest of the world. But we just find that hard. And when we find that hard, we would rather find ways to excuse ourselves from trying. I don't know if it would work, but I do think the world wants to watch a movie with a hero who is just a hero. And I think the world wants to see a people of God live out the qualities of God in real time, in real life, to make these dreams into reality. And see, here's the end of the rant, okay? At some point, I think we all stopped dreaming. I do. I think the world has stopped dreaming. The only dreams we have now are just more reality, more of this. The dreams that used to inspire, that used to invoke people to do amazing things, to break reality. We stopped doing that. We stopped being thirsty. We stopped being hungry for more. Instead, we just decided to pick up our phones and play the newest trendy game and be distracted for another 20 minutes. Because you know what? When you play that new game on your phone, it doesn't disappoint you. It might have ads that frustrate you, but it doesn't disappoint you. Dreaming will cost you. Dreaming is hard. Being thirsty is difficult. Being hungry is consuming. But Isaiah calls for a people of God to stand with open hands and open hearts and inspire the world to dream again, to trust, to believe that things don't have to always be like this. It really could be something more. So come, all who are thirsty, all who are tired of striving and surviving. The table is set. The invitation still stands. God is enough, more than enough. Not just for survival, but for joy, for purpose, for life that never ends. Here at this table, we don't bring our accomplishments or our qualifications. We bring our hunger. We bring our thirst. And God meets us not with scarcity, but with abundance. I know the irony, okay? It's a scarce meal. This bread, this cup, it's simple, but it speaks to a love beyond measure. In this meal, we remember Jesus, the very one who gave himself freely, who fed the hungry, who poured out grace without limit, who inspired people to dream again. It is nourishment for the journey. It is strength for our wilderness. It is a reminder that God's provision is always enough. So come, not because you have it all together, but because you need what only God could give. Come and be filled. Come and be renewed. Let's stand and sing.